This is the Android Buffet Podcast, episode number 427, recorded Wednesday, January 30th, 2019, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Weekly contribution to our theme music.
So welcome to another episode of the Android Buffet Podcast. Last week, as you may recall, there were some audio difficulties that were annoying me.
Yes.
So I ripped apart my entire audio setup.
Ripped it straight apart.
And could not figure out why it was malfunctioning, other than the fact that I've been using it for so long that it may not be up to snuff anymore.
Why? So, it's not like it. We're asking any more of it.
Well, you know, things do fail.
Okay, so you're saying it could have broke.
Yes.
But it's not like it obsolesced.
Well, I don't know. Every single part in my arsenal appears to have been replaced by a newer part. When I was looking into it, I went to look for the manual. Oh, they don't make this version anymore. They make a newer version of the same thing, and this version is discontinued. And so, what I decided to try to do is something a little different. So I'm going to each week try to rebuild my audio setup by using the minimal amount of parts necessary and then just keep iterating on that to improve the quality. So today there's no noise filtering. There is no mixing. The only device that is running the show is actually two USB adapters.
Two USB adapters.
This is the minimal setup I use when I'm traveling. It is the same microphone I usually use.
Okay.
But everything else is missing. Now, next week, I'm going to be putting back in the audio effects processor. That's the noise gating and the filtering so that it, when there's noise in the background, it will not be audible only when our voice goes above a certain level.
So we are expecting slightly worse than usual audio this week.
Well, I'm going to do some minor post-processing. So I'm going to do some digital noise filtering, but usually I do analog noise filtering. I do traditionally, I do everything in analog and then just record it digitally. Now, one of the other things on my list is to consider recording instead of into a computer, which I've been doing, into a digital recorder and then editing on a computer. Which I've done, again, on several occasions with mixed success. So the goal of this setup has been from the beginning to make it preset to the point at which I record the show largely live to tape. And you may notice that the show is usually up within a few minutes of us finishing.
It is.
That's because I don't do that much post-processing. Now, there's probably some argument that maybe I should, and it might be better if I did. But what I want to do is get everything as perfect as possible. So I'm asking for some feedback this week again, a bare minimum. Next week, an extra piece, and I'm going to keep going until I build the best setup for what I'm trying to do, and then that will permanently get enshrined on the shelf. Right now,
until it breaks.
Well, like anything else. Permanent is in until I'm forced to change it.
Sure.
So right now, the way that the wiring is, I have a UMC 204 HD, which is a Behringer two-input USB device, which is getting an input from my microphone and an input from the output from the Chromebook I use to record, or actually to communicate with you. So the output from the Behringer over USB is going into the recording computer, but one of the, since there, it has two mono signals. One of the mono outputs is going back out to the microphone input on the computer. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Seems complicated, but yes.
Well, I've always used two. All of the mixing is still being done in analog. It just it's being done in analog into a digital device. So there's no actual mixer. So you're in one channel, I'm in another channel, and on the computer side, I will just mix the two channels together. So that's the plan. Now, the improvements I want to make is this particular device, the 204HD, does have the two inserts, so I can bring the post-processing back in. Unfortunately, to do that, I need some insert cabling, and not here yet.
Okay.
It was delayed. We had a bit of a problem this afternoon here.
We did.
Really? You noticed? What were you doing here?
No, when I said we did, it was we did? Question mark.
Okay. So, you know I have a job. Or at least you assume I have one.
I do.
So I was at my office when I got in.
I have slightly more evidence than just assume.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I assume you tell me the truth when you tell me stories.
Yeah.
However, given that I believe you to tell me that you tell the truth when you talk to me about things, then I would say that I have that assume you have a job would be slightly inaccurate.
Yeah, you have no reason to believe that I've deceived you on this matter.
True.
Also, I buy toys, so either that or I'm independently wealthy. But so I was sitting at work this afternoon and I got a notification on my tick watch telling me that there was going to be in 5 minutes a snow squall.
Wow, it can do that?
Well, I have I subscribe for $3 a year to Dark Sky, which does actually do that in its app.
Wow.
I haven't decided if I'm going to continue that past the initial year, but that's pretty promising. That you need to be there in their premium program to get the watch notifications, but I found that very useful. So I got up and looked out the window and said, there doesn't look like there's going to be a squall out there. But a few minutes later, there was a squall.
Wow.
So it went from a gray and clear day to blinding white.
Cool.
Not if you're in it.
But you weren't.
Well, several of my coworkers left, but I opted to stay at the office until it cleared up. Seemed like a safer move, and then I came home.
How long was the squall?
Very quick, actually. About an hour. Short squall.
That's a quick squall?
That's a quick squall.
I don't even know what a snow squall is. We don't have those here.
Let's see. What is the actual definition of the word squall? Squall, a sudden violent gust of wind or a localized storm, especially one bringing rain, snow, or sleet. Even better, there are already videos on the internet the Gotham has put out remembering the great snow squall of 2019. Was it that great? Anyway, so it's been something of an eventful day in that regard. So I'm not surprised that packages might get delayed when the time they usually deliver the packages coincided with a time when I wouldn't recommend people be on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So other than that, we have some news.
News!
Well, the question is, it is not on the show notes, but I do have some home automation news to talk about. Do you want to save that for the end or at the beginning?
Let's do home automation at the end.
Okay, so we'll get back to that. So in some Android news, Google plans to fight Oracle's copyright lawsuit against Android. This is specifically against their implementation of the Java APIs. And they
specifically are meaning that they're petitioning the Supreme Court to take a look at the case.
Yes. And it's hard to tell how the Supreme Court will rule on certain social issues, being the composition of the court what it is. It's a lot easier to sort of guess how they will lean. But it's hard to say in a case like this if they will uphold the lower ruling, which, of course, I disagree with, and I think you do too, last time we checked, that an open-source API can be considered, that duplicating it can be considered to not be fair use.
Cool.
Anyway.
I'm of mixed mind about this. One, because I would like the question settled. Two, yeah. You know, everybody mostly on the Supreme Court is really old. You know, people that were born before computers were a thing. So, are they going to be able to understand the issues in front of them? I think it's a hard question.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. The reason why is I have followed the Supreme Court over the years, and I followed a lot of people in certain positions, and I'm of the opinion that most of them do not understand this sort of stuff. Now, there was one judge in this case who seemed to understand it. However, I believe he was overturned. So, what can you do? Moving along, Android Q might permit app downgrades.
Wow. That's crazy. I think it's crazy.
Why? You have that in other systems. If something isn't working, you can go to the older version of the same app.
Well,
that sounds wow. like a good thing to me.
Not if you're a developer. Talk about even more fragmentation.
Not necessarily. You're saying that
because you know why people on different Google Chrome is one of the most successful browsers?
Because it forces you to upgrade.
And it does so silently without you even noticing.
Well, here, if you're having a problem, you can go and revert your version. However, I would imagine that developers would be under no obligation to support an older version of the software if they released a newer one. So it's at your own risk.
True. I wonder if they'll be able to...
To what?
Disable that ability.
I'm not sure.
This is a preliminary thing anyway. I'm sorry?
This is a preliminary report, so we don't know what they're going to do.
Well, imagine you have a piece of software that accesses an API on your own server.
Okay. I'll imagine that.
And you update your API and you update your software.
Well, okay.
If the old software doesn't work against the new API, which why would you expect that it would, then that could cause problems. Although, one would suspect that if they upgrade, because they have to.
Yes.
And then it doesn't work and they downgrade. Okay. Or if they upgrade and it has a bug and then they downgrade and it doesn't work at all, they
might uninstall it, is what you're concerned about.
That's a likely result.
By the way, I hate to break the train of thought, but did my audio just change?
It did.
Better or worse?
Worse.
Worse.
Lower.
Lower. Okay. I was trying to adjust it again. I was trying to make it. Okay. That better?
Speak some more.
Is that better?
Yeah, not as good as it was.
Okay, I'll keep working on it.
That's better.
Yeah, I was having a plosive problem, but I'll fiddle with that later. Every time I said a P noise, I heard a popping, so I tried to adjust my pop filter, but you know, apparently I have to work on my pops. I'll fix it. Maybe that'll work. That better or worse?
Sounds fine.
Okay.
It is absolutely a different audio level.
Yeah.
But it sounds fine.
I fixed the audio level. I'm trying to make it so that you don't hear me go. Except when I'm deliberately doing that. But anyway, sorry about that. I think it's finally time for me to fix some of these long-standing problems. But moving along, Android Q may also prevent background applications from reading the clipboard.
I so love this idea.
Well, right now, why would you want them to? What is the acceptable use case of this?
I know, right?
Now, in the foreground, I understand this. I want to copy something. I want to be able to paste it. But why would an app need to be able to read the clipboard silently in the background? It seems like that's just trying to exploit a permission.
Well, just because we can't think of a reason does not mean that there is not a valid reason. However, that's why permissions are so granular. If you don't need to be able to do it, then you can't. And if you need to be able to do it, then one supposes that you have a valid reason, and you can ask for the permission, and it will explain that permission when.
Yeah, the problem being that this is going to be designated as a system permission. So I'd like to know if there is an app that actually has a use case for this permission.
I don't know. I truly don't.
Well, again, that's always problematic.
Translators, maybe?
Well, no, I appreciate that they're locking down permissions that they don't know whether or not everybody would need, but the question tends to be, what if you do need it, and how do you prove to them you need it? Now, several apps have had problems with that where they've taken away permissions that they used. And some of them, Cerberus as an example, just gave up and said, well, that feature's dead now.
Now, is that what a signature, the protection level being signatured, is that what that means? That Google has to approve that particular permission?
No, that means it's a system level permission. It means you need root access.
Oh. So with an unrooted phone, you're not getting this permission.
Correct. If I'm reading it correctly.
Interesting. Well, I am certainly open to the possibility that there's a valid reason. I can't think of one, though. But that does not, as I've said, that does not stop there from being a valid
Yeah,
reason.
I'd like to hear somebody who has one, who has that use case. Because remember, app developers can be very creative with things that you wouldn't have even thought they were capable of.
Know, right?
Oh, yeah, and I'm trying to think of some good examples of it. But there are the w only one that comes to mind are people figuring out these really weird ways of using features that nobody would think of. But I'm trying to think of a good example. All the ones I have are pretty bad. But if anybody thinks of one, please drop us a line. Moving along, even with 80% of the smartphone market, one editorial suggests that Android apps are still worse than their iOS counterparts.
Well, I think you're going to run into that whenever the barrier of entry is lower, then you're going to get lower skilled people doing that. So it's not a big deal
But still
to develop and
disappointing.
deploy an Android application. I know this from experience. So yeah, makes sense to me. I'll buy it.
But it's still disappointing that they are not working to make the Android experience better when it certainly developers who develop for Android have succeeded in making good experiences. It seems to be the one companies that put out multiple versions of their software that give more attention to one than the other. And maybe it's because they see that they think that iOS is more valuable.
I don't know if I feel that's right. But could be. The numbers and statistics seem to prove out that Android users do spend less than their iOS counterparts.
Yeah, but a lot of these apps are advertiser supported. Should that make a difference? Or are people targeting iOS
Absolutely.
users as
Different
having more to.
audiences have different worths. Different values to advertisers.
I'm curious how much more an iOS user is worth than an Android user.
I may be able to find that information out.
In the abstract,
No,
if
I
you
mean
have.
in like concrete sense.
Yeah, I'm saying if you have any general idea about that that you might be able to research, I'm curious what the answer is.
Yeah, I think I might be able to
Ask around.
pull some numbers on that.
Okay. So if you can tell me that one is more valuable than the other and by how much, I'm curious. And now we have a cliffhanger. Something to tune in for
Yes,
next.
I will not have that information until next week because That's some. I've got to dig through some data that I have.
Yeah, I'm saying now we have a reason for people to tune in next week. Although there is a possibility that I might attend an event next week, and in the event that runs late, then I may ask you to push slightly. I will keep you posted.
I'm sure that I can be flexible.
You have been in the past.
As have you.
And if not, I can make you feel guilty about the time you forgot to show up.
I didn't forget to show up.
You slept through the show.
I slept through the show. I was sick.
I didn't say I was going to make you feel guilty. I said I could make you feel guilty. I'm not going to try.
Anyway.
Moving along. PowerAmp is going to get Android Auto integration and improved assistant integration. Now I'm excited about this because PowerAmp just got this major refresh after not being updated for a while, but this was my first... the first music player that I actually liked. So I'm very happy that it's being updated. So apparently the changelog includes things like Android Auto support, which is waiting for Google approval. So you can't activate it. Improved support for Google Assistant, where you can tell it to play something. Support for all their apps using the Media Session and Media Browser Android APIs, such as Wear Apps. New miscellaneous options. So a bunch of different things. Samsung Pi support. I assume that's some sort of custom thing for Samsung devices. New high-res output, defined by the device option for USB digital to analog converter outputs. So PowerAmp appears to be an app where they do care about the audio, which is nice.
Now, PowerAmp requires that you have the music locally on your device, correct?
It is a local music player, so yes.
Now, I wonder, how common is that nowadays?
Well, for people who are in a certain group, common. But is that for everybody? No. So why do I have music locally on my device? Because I don't want to pay twice, one for a subscription fee and then another for the data. And the most common place that I listen to music is when I'm on the go.
Okay.
So I'll give you a different example. I have been taking to, during my lunch break, going to the basement of the building I work in, where they have a treadmill, and taking a walk. I would take a walk outside, however, it's cold. By the way, it's about 7 degrees right now. Just to scare you.
And is that Fahrenheit or Celsius?
That is Fahrenheit. Yeah. Not counting the wind chill, by the way. But the point is that I do not want to take a walk outside, so I eat my lunch and then I go downstairs. However, the reception down there is somewhat limited. And if I relied on streaming music, then I would get music where it would cut out every 5 seconds. So I have a Moto X4. It has a card slot in it. I put a 128 gigabyte card in, and I loaded about 7,000 tracks, so I have not run out. And I am a collector of music. I do not stream it very often. In the house occasionally, but most of the time when I'm on the go, it's from my collection.
Wow. I'm just curious how common it is for people to keep audio collections on their phone.
Again, for people who don't want to use a large amount of data, who are serious about their music collection, probably more common than people who just enjoy listening to music in general. So there is a subgroup that's interested in this.
But how big do you think that subgroup is?
I don't know. Enough to support a hobbyist community. There are a lot of groups that are not necessarily gigantic, but support.
That's true. Very true.
And again, it's not like there aren't other music choices. I experimented with Rocket Player, which is not bad. I experimented with MD Player. And I'll probably continue to experiment because I have music that I want to listen to. So I'm always looking for new ways to enjoy it. And everything, you know, has its limitations. So moving along, Google Cloud Print has joined the group of apps that have passed 1 billion installs. I always feel I should do that on Mike Myers' voice.
1 billion. That's a lot of installs.
Yeah.
And
do you print off of your phone?
No.
Do you print off of your computer?
Yes.
Regularly?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. And people say paper is dead.
Well, you know, business.
Yeah, well, I have a printer. I'm still on the cartridge that came with it, but it's a printer. Moving along, Google Duo might get a web client. So the question is Duo the new Hangouts? If Hangouts is migrating to Hangouts Chat, which is a Slack-like thing, are the video and audio conversation components going to just be Duo? Because if you can register Duo using your email address and your Google account instead of being forced to use your phone number, and there's a web client, doesn't that pretty much replace traditional Hangouts?
It could. But also, keep in mind that there's no guarantee or even belief that a web client is coming. It's they may launch one.
I'd expect them to, just because people want to be able to have conversations on their larger devices.
Oh, sure. I even use the Messages web client.
Yeah, so the fact that I think we've continually brought up our collective issues with Google's messaging approach, namely that it's messed up most of the time.
Well, it's
fragmented.
Fragmented. Yeah. Google has a fragmentation problem.
Yeah, which unfortunately it's the problem with freedom. Too many people, too many efforts, and no unified vision, and they keep pivoting. And it would be fine if they pivoted, but their response to pivoting is to just sort of take something away, and it's, oh, Allo is the next big thing. Oh, Allo didn't work out. We're getting rid of it.
Well, it's a lot harder to pivot a cruise ship than it is a speedboat. And Google is absolutely a large entity.
Yeah, I know. So is the Titanic.
I'm not sure that that's relevant.
It was a large ship, and it was hard to turn.
Yes, but it also sank. Are you saying that Google's going to sink? If they can't figure out how to turn faster, yes? Is that what you're saying?
I'm moving in that direction, yes.
All right.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying that companies that do not learn how to change direction effectively get into trouble.
All right.
Let's see here. Connectivity issues have apparently stopped sales of the Echo wall clock.
Wow.
I like the idea of the Echo wall clock, but I don't like the Echo wall clock.
I agree. And I absolutely agree.
I would like a device where I could hang on my wall that I could send information to look at visually. However,
like a monitor?
Well, no, a monitor is a lot more invasive. Now, if you look at some of the trial things that Google was showing off at CES, where they had these e-paper screens that could be used to do notifications.
Right.
That's a little closer to what I was sort of thinking.
Like the slab of wood?
That may be a bit much for me.
Yeah.
But I keep... Somewhere around here, I have a little e-paper screen hooked up to a Pi Zero that I was going to experiment with. Do you know why I haven't done that yet?
Lack of ideas?
No. Remember where I said somewhere around here?
Ah, that'll do it. It got misplaced.
Well, I have a lot of junk around here. I moved all the furniture, and now I can't remember where anything is. I need like 3 years just to clean, and then I'll mess it up again. So, although I have been spending a lot of time recycling things at the local stables. The city of New York does not allow me to dispose of electronics. So Staples is required to take certain types of electronics from me, so they've been seeing me once a week with stuff that I've discovered while cleaning that I've decided to finally...
What you mean Staples is required?
There's a thing where certain retailers who sell items have to take those items back for recycling. Specifically in the case of Staples, they actually, I believe, do it voluntarily in most states.
Interesting.
So if you go to a Staples and bring items that are on their list, they will recycle them for you. Or they'll say they will. If they're throwing in a dumpster behind the
like
place, at least
ink cartridges?
Yes, but the list includes things like computers. So I have brought them old computers for them to recycle. And old components. And again, I don't know what they're doing with them. I am trusting that they're recycling them and not throwing them in a dumpster. But if they throw them in a dumpster, that's not my fault. Since they're supposed to be recycling them. So I can at least feel like I didn't contribute to the problem. That and I didn't get fined by the city of New York for trying to throw it out at the curb. Which, as I mentioned, now illegal.
Okay. Well,
about 2 months ago, the New York City Department of Sanitation had their quarterly hazardous items disposal event. They do this every quarter. So Staples will not take old televisions, and my grandmother had two CRT televisions that we wanted to get rid of. So my father and I went down to recycle them. This was in a local park, and the line was like an hour wait. So you had to wait in your car for an hour to get to the front of the line so you could dispose of your... I forget what else you have. It was solvents, paint. So all sorts of dangerous goods, but they had like a whole staging operation. It was very impressive. But I'd like to avoid having to do that again.
Interesting.
It was. Again, not necessarily something I'd want to repeat if I could help it, but it was interesting. In your local area, if it's anything like mine, if you do a search online, usually one of the local sanitation organizations has a list of both public and private disposal events.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking to safely dispose of hazardous goods, including electronics. There's my PSA for the day. So I go there and I dispose of things because I have too much junk. And it's hard to get rid of things that you're emotionally...
One might say that you should not get rid of things you are emotionally attached to.
My old phone?
If you're emotionally attached to it, keep it.
I'm going to break the emotional attachment.
Okay. Ask yourself, does this bring me joy? And if it does, keep it.
Thank you, Marie Kondo. Anyway.
Oh, you got it. Awesome.
I did. I have my moments of popular culture, if you can call that popular culture.
I think it's popular culture. Everybody that I know gets it.
Yeah, well, not my area of expertise, but considering that I have too much junk, I am up on current uncluttering theory. Moving along, a future Chrome update may kill some ad blocking extensions.
Oh, I'm so unhappy about this.
Which one of these do you use?
I use uBlock.
uBlock or uBlock Origin?
I use uBlock.
Okay, I use uBlock Origin. But apparently, the Manifest version 3, which was what they're talking about, which is under development, will include breaking changes to APIs, which would affect content blockers by breaking complex content filtering.
Right. So you can set up a list of URLs or a list of hosts. I believe it's just host, where you can block content from them. But you can't do any type of other filtering, like anything in the path or the extension or headers or the size of it, or does it include a script tag, things like that. And that's going to make...
Well, I will quote the last line of as my solution. So the author of this particular article from Android Police, Corbin Davenport, writes at in the conclusion of the story, Google could decide to drop this specific API change. If not, Firefox is a pretty great browser these days. So since I am using Firefox, I guess I'll stick with it. I do use Chrome, but I use both. But so.
I have been using Firefox more and more lately.
It's gotten a lot better than it was. There were a few years there where I was a little disappointed in it, but I think they've made a really good effort.
Oddly enough, on my system, YouTube kind of stutters, the video stutters. Not a lot, but like it'll skip a frame or something, and I notice it, and it's kind of annoying. Firefox is glass smooth playing YouTube. Go figure. My issue with Firefox is that it takes so long to start up.
Why do you ever terminate it?
I routinely close things that I'm done using for the moment.
Yeah, well, there's a point at which you're done using your browser? I'm not going to say
there's
that
a point
I
at which
Windows.
I'm done using all of the tabs that I have open.
Okay. No, I'll accept that. I'm just saying usually I have at least a few tabs open, even though I constantly close things. And I do have a thing called auto tab discard, which unloads the memory from individual tabs if I don't use them for a while and haven't whitelisted them.
Oh, I don't care about the memory. It's the
clutter.
I like to. It's the clutter. It's exactly it. It's the clutter.
I'll accept that. I'd like to be less cluttered, but as I mentioned from my physical life, my digital life is probably just as cluttered. So my physical desktop needs to be cleaned, as probably does my virtual desktop. Moving along, Google I.O. 2019 will be held on May 7th through the 9th in Mountain View, California.
And yet another year that I will not go.
Well, not only that, yet another year where they will promise you something that they won't deliver. Or they'll promise you something that they will deliver, and then they'll kill it a year later after you've come to like it.
Wow, that's harsh.
Is it? Where did they announce
I'm not saying it's in. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying that you're not speaking the truth. All I'm saying is it's harsh.
By the way, speaking of which, as a public service announcement, if you care anything about your Google Plus data, please download it now because they will be purging it in a few months. So go to Google Takeout and download it and keep it somewhere, even if you don't think you'll ever use it. Should I download the data from the Android Buffet page?
Yes, you just said, even if you don't think you'll ever need it.
Yeah, but that's a page, not necessarily a personal thing, but I will figure out how to download that too. I'm sure there's a page export somewhere. And maybe there's something I can do with that data. Actually, that's a weird idea. If there are any comments on a Google Plus post, can I import those comments into the episode that they were referring to as WordPress comments, since Android Buffet is running on WordPress? That would be interesting, wouldn't it? That's like a permanent record of those conversations.
It would.
Wonder how many conversations there were. Anyway, moving along. Bluetooth will become even more accurate at finding your lost gadgets.
This intrigues me.
Well, I'm not sure that I care about finding my lost gadgets per se, but the fact that they think that Bluetooth can get this accurate means that you can do a whole bunch of other things with it. You know, Tile is one of those things, and I do have a Tile tracker attached to my keys because I can never remember where I leave them. And I like that I can press a button on my phone and it can send a signal that will make my keys make a noise.
That is cool, but it would be even cooler if you could have a map on your phone, or even if it's just like a radar thing, you know, directional and distance.
I agree, and that's why I shared this story. So if you read the article, Bluetooth trackers could tell users when an item is down to the centimeter. Now, it could locate missing gadgets, but could also be used to improve the accuracy of tracking in indoor spaces where beacons are used to help people navigate. Now, the thing is, beacons aren't as popular as people thought they'd be. They used to be, you know.
They're not as effective as people thought they'd be.
Well, I'm saying that businesses tried using them, but it hasn't quite worked out. Where the last thing I saw about beacons was there was a Waze story today about them. Yeah, so apparently Waze beacons have arrived in my hometown of New York City. So Waze apparently puts these beacons in places where there isn't good reception in order to assist people in navigating. So they'll be putting beacons into the tunnels in New York City. And this will be in cooperation with the MTA and the Port Authority. They're open source and can technically work with any navigation app once support. So they're using the Google Eddystone project.
I don't know what that is.
Eddystone is a beacon format. So Eddystone is a Bluetooth LE beacon format to deploy real-world context. So this is an open source project to for Bluetooth LE beacons. So what ends up happening is they put this little Waze beacon. So Waze is, as you know, is a navigation app. In order to combat the fact that GPS doesn't work well in bridges, tunnels, and other areas where there's interference. So by putting these beacons in specific places, they will assist these basically ways in figuring out where it is so that the navigation can continue even when the reception in regards to location cannot.
Cool.
According to this, Waze beacons, let's see, affordable, scalable, open source technology is easy to install and can help with tunnel navigation. There are little plastic pucks which stick to the sides of tunnels like this, Bluetooth beacons, and are placed in locations in order to do this. So it's they use them to determine altitude, mileage from tunnel exit, and other details, which they broadcast. So let's see. They're about every 130, which is a per mile deployment cost of 1,100. An individual beacon is about $28.50, and they recommend 42 beacons per mile of tunnel. For Chicago, Waze supplied 450 along 5 miles, and 3,000 Waze beacons operate on roads globally. They have a battery life of 6 years. They're environmentally resistant. That's very interesting. Anyway, I could talk about beacons for a long time. They never worked for me, though. But I don't really have a robust implementation plan. I just played with them. Moving along. Any thoughts, Jerry, before we move on to the final story on the list?
Not really, although I did find it interesting that they're putting Bluetooth beacons that will be used by vehicles that are driving by them.
Well, that's sort of the idea. Beacons are designed to
Quick,
allow them.
connect! No, quick, connect to the next one. No, connect to the next one. No, connect to the next one.
That's the whole idea of these beacons, to allow positioning.
Wow.
Planes do that.
It's
Why does it
interesting.
surprise you? Planes do this.
They don't connect to Bluetooth things on the ground.
No, they connect to radio beacons.
That's different.
Is it? It's different technology, but it's the same idea.
Different signal strengths.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's a different technology, but it's the same concept of a moving object positioning itself based on a stationary object transmitting a signal.
Right, but radio beacons are a one-way thing. They transmit a signal out, and you evaluate the modulation to determine your position relative to
Yeah.
that beacon. And when you get two of them, then you can determine your actual, your
No,
two-dimensional
I'm not
location.
arguing with you that they are different implementations. I'm saying that they are.
Bluetooth is a two-way thing. It's like you know, your phone's got to talk to the thing, and the thing's got to talk to your phone.
Yeah.
And when you're driving by at 60 miles an hour, that's not a whole lot of time to do that, because Bluetooth doesn't have a big range.
Yeah. But I'm back to saying that they're trying to solve a similar problem, just with different technology. I still believe that. Anyway, moving along.
I don't disagree with that. Okay. All I'm saying is that Bluetooth seems like an odd choice.
It's in every phone. Ubiquity
is a fast connection, but okay.
Yeah, well, they say that, I'm guessing by this, they think they can make it even faster, because we were just talking about being able to isolate this down to the... So, moving along, I put in the story about Tuya. So, Tuya is an IoT company, and they've recently found a way to, without having to solder, to flash these Tuya devices. So Tuya licenses their technology and their infrastructure to a lot of different companies. So if you go on to Amazon and buy a smart device, there's a good chance that the software IoT platform for it is actually Tuya. So there, I have not bought any of these devices up until this point because I do not trust Tuya. I don't distrust them per se, but I prefer that my IoT devices are connected locally. So I've been buying devices that I can flash with alternative firmware. Now, the Tuya devices could be flashed with alternative firmware, but you have to solder a bunch of wires onto the main board. And you may have noticed that I avoid soldering. Also, I don't see the point of dismantling a device completely, soldering a wire onto it, flashing something, then desoldering the wire, and then sealing it up and never using it again. I'd rather find something that didn't require that.
Sure.
So,
makes sense.
Tuya claims to have made over 11,000 products worldwide, smart home ready. So there's a lot of stuff out there that uses Tuya. So the problem being that it was demonstrated recently by a security expert that its security is lacking. So they demonstrated vulnerabilities in its provisioning procedure that allow intruders to hijack the device and modify its firmware. So here's where the problem comes in. So because of that, now people have come up with an over-the-air way of changing the firmware on a Tuya device. Isn't that great?
No, because that means they don't need physical access to it to compromise it.
Oh, they do need physical access to it. They don't need to open it up. They need to be within range of it. So you need to be within, but you need to specifically be within range of a non-provisioned device. Once the device is provisioned, it's connected to something. So you need a fresh device that has not been there, or a device you've reset in order to do this.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's not a super bad deal problem.
No. Well, because usually in order to put the device into this modification mode, you have to press a button on it, which means you need physical access to the device.
Okay.
So not quite as bad. Now, there are a few things here. Because these are vulnerabilities that allow you to flash and modify the firmware, it means you can put on an open source alternative to the pre-installed firmware, which is what I want to do. Because I don't see the point in my house talking to a server somewhere else in order to turn something on when I'm inside my house. And I really don't I don't want to crack open the device or use a soldering iron. So they've come up with a way to do this, and I wanted to try it, so I ordered myself some smart plugs for like $10. So they're sitting over there until I get a few free minutes to do this. However, I want to see if I can flash any devices I need as soon as possible before the people at Tuya change and encrypt their firmware update utility, and therefore that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, they're probably going to fix it.
Well, fix is a relative thing. Back to me, I want it to be able to do this. I consider it a feature. And I would not have bought some of these devices if I wasn't able to put my own software on them. And I accept the company, once I do that, will no longer support me. I would like it if these companies added a nice, safe, and secure way for me to do what I want to do. They'll get money from me. Meanwhile, I have some smart energy monitoring outlets back there I have to flash over the weekend. So that brings us to what we did in home automation this week.
What did you do in home automation this week? Because I'm sure it's more exciting than what I did in home automation.
Well, I think I mentioned that I had a fan that was malfunctioning with a Zigbee receiver built into it that I wanted to replace with a device that I had flashed with alternative firmware, a Sonoff iFan O2.
Yes.
So I had been able to flash it without having to solder anything on, and I was prepared to install it until I realized that whoever had installed the fan for me, since I have trouble lifting fans up to the ceiling by myself.
We have discussed this, yes.
Yep. I had tucked the wires under the bracket. So over the weekend, I enlisted the assistance of my father so that I'd have a second person to hold the fan, and we were able to get the controller module out and replace it with the new controller module. So now everything's working perfectly. I can control my fan from my Home Assistant installation, and I have this lovely remote here that came with it, so I can also control it by pressing the button on the remote.
Cool. Oops.
No, I just have to hold it up in the air. I think holding it near the microphone does not work very well with the radio frequency. I think it's confusing it. But anyway, moving along. So that was my thing. I cleaned up a bunch of related things to the lighting system in here. So that took a long time. I was very much afraid that the fan was going to fall off while we were trying to do it. As far as I can tell, we didn't break anything.
Good.
So that was my biggest project. But other than that, I continued to try to make things a little more integrated. So as we wrap up the show, just to remind you, this is the first of several audio tests I'm doing. This audio test is the most minimal one that I've done with the same type of design of having two computers connected together with two analog to digital converters hooked together with traditional wiring. And I'm going to continue to add pieces to that. So next piece will be bringing back my noise gate, which filters the noise when nobody's talking. So we'll see how that works. And we'll just keep going until I am happy with the results.
Awesome.
I like your opinion.
Me too.
Yep. And Jerry, don't worry. If you continue to have trouble, I'll go with plan B for you to hear me.
Okay.
That involves what I did back in the old days, which is I had a separate microphone just for you. So I'd have two microphones, one for recording my voice and the other one just so you could hear what I was saying.
Oh, I get my own mic.
Well, if you can't hear what I'm saying, it makes this podcast work very poorly. So until next week, maybe.
Maybe.
Just because there might be a slight delay.
I'm sure we'll figure it out.
We usually do. And here's to more Android news and more home automation news. And maybe I can see my desk.
Goodbye, folks. Y'all have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week. Maybe.